Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manipro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. Manipro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author Pat Foreman. Today is Tuesday, August 24th, and I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, and of course, get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. In fact, yesterday we added a new item. I don't think it's quite yet up on the website, but we did add a new item, an aluminum water bottle. It's a really cool blue color with the Chicken Whisperer logo on it. So we've got all kinds of things by request coming at you at chickenwhisperer.com and Chicken Whisperer gear. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room. It's going on right now. You can talk with other backyard poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guest when we have them on. Today is no exception. We've got a great couple of guests on and a great topic. So just put all of your questions in caps in the chat room so Pat, myself, and Christina will know that that is a question you'd like to ask on the air. All you have to do is click on the Chat Now button at our homepage at Blog Talk Radio. Take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk all about backyard poultry, show poultry, and sustainable lifestyle living. Also would like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manipro. Manipro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that Manipro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. Manipro, nurturing life.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
Since 1947, Randall Berkey has been providing quality products to their customers. They have everything you could ever want or need for backyard poultry. Feeders, waterers, medications, supplements, nesting boxes, and even coops. Visit them online at randallberkey.com and get 10% off your entire order when you use the coupon code WHISPER. That's randallberkey.com. If you're looking for a quality-made chicken coop, then look no further than Horizon Structures. When you purchase from Horizon Structures, you can rest assured that your product is produced and delivered with the highest craftsmanship through traditional value, honesty, and integrity. All chicken coops are delivered fully assembled and ready to use right away. To pick out your new Horizon Structures chicken coop, visit horizonstructures.com. That's horizonstructures.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Advocate and author Pat Foreman. Hey, Pat.
No, hey, Whisper. I'm just dying to know. I'm just so curious, Whisper. How did the processing seminar go last night at the meetup group?
It was great. We had about 45 people in attendance, and
wow.
It was great. Everybody started filing in around 6:30. Around 6:45, I started and gave away all kinds of great door prizes from a lot of our sponsors, got their attention all of a sudden right off the bat with all the great door prizes we gave away. Then we had a little session, maybe about 5 or 10 minutes, about salmonella and the egg scare and what's going on and things to do if you own backyard poultry. And then I turned it over to the one of the employees there, Russ, at South Face, and we immediately went outside, and they actually had lots of people showed up. They had lots of pictures taken. We'll be posting them on our meetup site probably throughout the week, and they had, looks like, two barred rock roosters that someone had that their neighbors were complaining about, and so it was time to process those. So it was really, really good. Lots of great questions came out of it. They demonstrated a couple of different ways, but then they mentioned other ways that you could actually cull your birds, whichever worked best for you and your environment. They had the whole nine yards from the actual culling of the bird, and then of course they had a propane tank that was filling up this big pot of water, scalding water that you dip the bird in to help defeather. Then they plucked it, and they actually cut it and processed it for it to put in the fridge. So from culling all the way to refrigeration to consuming, it was done full circle last night at the event. I know a lot of people don't do that. They wouldn't fathom doing that to their pet chickens. So, and a lot of our members of our group are the same way. But it was one of the most requested classes that we've ever had. It was one of the biggest classes we've ever had as far as turnout, because people think, you know, no, I do not raise meat birds in my backyard. I would never even consider having to do this to my Ruby and you know, all the little names that they have in their backyard. And but they want to know, they want to have this knowledge, they're interested. So if one day they have to, if they choose to, they want to know what to do and how to do that. Yeah, exactly. So it was a really big turnout after the processing class, which lasted about an hour. We got to tour this beautiful, beautiful facility there at South Face headquarters in Atlanta. It's one of the very few LEED certified buildings in all of America. It's like the whole place is like 97% sustainable. It's incredible, from the carpet to the lighting. And this one huge, beautiful conference room we were meeting in, when you walk in, it actually counts the number of people that come in the door that affects the heating and cooling system, to know to actually cool it down before it gets too many people in there, before it gets too hot, then it has to overwork, things like that. It had countertops made out of waste from coal factories. It had cork floors, lighting, louvers on the outside based on when the sun come up, sun comes down. It was just truly an amazing. They compost everything. They have gardens. In the restrooms, of course, they had the sensors when you walked in for the light to turn on. If there was already enough light, the light wouldn't turn on. Water-saving toilets. You could do a half-flush choice or a full-flush choice. It had water-saving where you wash your hands. Totally compostable paper towels that go into the compost bin. It's amazing. I mean, this building is like 100% basically recyclable, full circle. From the time you walk in to the time, it's truly amazing. So everybody seemed to love the tour. An amazing building, great folks there at South Base. So, yeah, last night's meetup, I think, was a big winner. Had a great time with that. And fun was, I think, had by all. So we had a really great time. Thank you very much for asking. We did have a great time.
Yeah, well, I wish I could have been there, not only for the processing class, interestingly, like you said, when we do courses up here, it's among the top three that are being requested now. People that have already taken the Laying Hens 101 and the Brooding Baby Chicks from scratch, the next one they want to talk about that would be in the top two are gardening, processing, and coop building. So we'll probably be having one up here with our poultry group too. And there's a question in the chat room. Did anyone heave or faint?
No. There were a couple of people that really weren't interested no matter what happened, and they kind of just were walking around the building taking a look. Not too many, maybe only about three people. Everybody was there mainly for, they wanted to take the tour, but I think most folks were there mainly for the processing class, and we had volunteers that came up, and actually after the birds were scalded, they would actually pluck the bird, and then the gentleman actually demonstrated how to, you know, to remove the crop and all the gizzards and whatnot to, you know, safely trying not to damage those. And it was very, very, very interesting and educational. Last night was very educational. I want to let everybody know that the meetup groups that are popping up all over the country are awesome. I think the Atlanta Backyard Poultry Meetup Group was probably the third in the nation. Very proud to say we are the largest, approaching probably 1,200 members by this weekend. And very, very active. We meet four or five times in different areas of Atlanta because we've gotten so large, from Conyers to Gainesville to Douglasville, inside the perimeter, you name it. But if you in your area, if you love backyard poultry and you want to educate more people about backyard poultry, Meetup Group is a way to do it, to meet locals. Just go to meetup.com. And then search for your area, search for poultry, chickens, fowl, and pet chickens, use all those keywords. And if you want to see kind of what a meetup can do, and some that are very successful, then you can go to meetup.com/chickens. That's meetup.com/chickens, and you can see the Atlanta Backyard Poultry Meetup, how we're set up, the forums, the schedules, the events we have, the whole nine yards. Austin also has an awesome, very good meetup group out there. Michelle's doing a great job with that one. I think that's meetup.com/Austin Backyard Poultry. There's one in Little Rock that's doing great, Raleigh, Sacramento. There's one in L.A., Portland, Seattle. Just go to meetup.com. You'll see it, and then you can start your own meetup in your town and start a chicken club if you feel so inclined to do so. And we've had a great time. We've met lots of great people through meetup. And another big event we're having with our meetup group is, of course, if you're a regular listener, you know all about it. This coming Saturday, August the 28th, we will have Chicks for Charity. The press release went out today, already getting lots of media hits and story requests from this event. We're giving away 1,100 baby chicks and to promote backyard poultry and raise money for our charity, the East Atlanta Kids Club. And so we will be broadcasting live this Saturday. I don't have a time yet. It'll probably be 10 to 11. I'm guessing when we'll actually be broadcasting the radio show live, 10 to 11 Eastern Standard Time. You'll be able to listen. We'll interview some new baby chick owners. We'll be able to interview some of our existing members and what they think about the meetup group and why they volunteer. So we're going to have a really, really great time with the event this Saturday. So if you're in the Atlanta area, really anywhere in Georgia, you want to come on out, it's this Saturday from 9 to 1. We may run out of baby chicks the first hour, and we may have 500 left at 1 o'clock. I do not know what to expect, but I'm thinking with the big egg recall and people interested in wanting sustainable lifestyle, people maybe sitting on the fence that have been wanting to do this, now have a reason to come out and do it and help a good cause as well. So we're looking forward to that this Saturday. So definitely looking forward to it. How about you? What's happening in the City Chicks Pat Forman world?
Well, thank you for asking, too. I just wanted to add to the meetup groups, Whisper, like you were saying, is that you and I will both be pleased to help folks get started. If they just don't know where to start or whatever with meetups or poultry clubs, both of us would be glad to come on with Skype. We can be there and do interactive presentations. I love, of course, talking about chickens and gardening and encourage them to consider poultry and garden clubs as the same club. But sure, we're there to help, and I love to talk, so I know you do too. So yeah, if any meetup wants to have a discussion on just about anything to do with poultry, both you and I are more than pleased to do that. And what's nice is we don't have to travel to do it. We can do it from our offices and just sitting at home, and it's so much fun to meet so many people. But that's my two cents on that. What's interesting with this egg recall, Whisper, is that sales of City Chicks are rising with the tide. That's what my distributor told me anyway, or my publisher slash distributor. So I think this might be a good thing for backyard flocks to bring awareness that we don't have to use factory farming and these huge numbers of not healthy ways to raise our farm and meat animals, that there are alternatives, and they're like diamonds in your backyard. You can do it right at home, do it cost effectively, and even do it so that it helps the environment and helps everybody. So that was my good news this morning. And
that's great news.
Yeah. It's all kind of coming together. I think we even got a Canadian distributor today. That would be great because it's kind of hard to get across the border. It's just amazing what a border can do to commerce because of the customs taxes and of course the exchange rate can always be a factor. So that's my little world is quite lovely. We've got some rain. It's just life-giving. It's one of those gentle rains that soaks in that the plants just love. And I'm sitting here in my office just cozy. Got a cat on my lap. This is my muse. She loves, I don't know what it is. It's something about when the talk show starts, she wants to be in here. And so usually I let her, sometimes I don't, but she's behaving herself today. So anyway, that's pretty much it. I've got a couple of news items.
Go ahead and roll with them. Go ahead and roll with them. Great, yeah.
Okay, these are more vignettes. I read so much, and I just find these things so interesting about what's happening positively in our culture. But one thing that's, you know, as a pharmacist, I'm just absolutely fascinated with the whole ADHD phenomena that's going on in our country. I know you don't know anything about that, Whisper, but they're saying some pesticides are linked to ADHD. Pesticides linked to deficiency, what attention deficiency syndrome, or something like that. It says exposure to a certain class of pesticides has been linked to attention deficit and hyperactivity disorders in children, and probably with adults. And the greatest risk falling on children whose mothers ingested pesticide-laced foods while they were pregnant. These are the organophosphophosphates that work by attacking the nervous system of insecticides. And guess what, friends? They are oil-based as well. And the findings suggest that pregnant women and children should eat more organic produce or spend more time washing produce, because apparently these get on the skins and they kind of get impounded in that. I mean, wouldn't that be pretty interesting if all the kids in our schools are taking this Ritalin or whatever because of pesticide exposure? That's a huge, huge question to ponder. Anyway.
Absolutely. Interesting.
Yeah. This next one is just, a vignette from the future. It says, energy-efficient highway is planned. And Finland plans to build the world's first green highway. You were just in a tour of a green building last night. Well, listen to this green highway to get you there. It's an 81 stretch of road that will have a service stations offering electric charging and pumps for those for locally made biofuels. So they'll have chargers where you can just plug in your electric as well as locally made biofuel pumps. It will also feature smart lighting that automatically adjusts the lighting levels along the motorway depending on the traffic and weather conditions. And the highway would complete a stretch of existing highway that would link the towns of Turku on the country's southwestern coast with Vilamia, V-A-A-L-I-M-A-A, near the border with Russia. So it's going to cost about $900 million to get that in there. It sounds like they've got quite a few electric cars already over there in Finland, which is encouraging. And this last one is pretty cool. It says whiskey. Whiskey making may help fuel cars. Scottish scientists, yeah, you just don't want it to fuel the drivers, but Scottish scientists have proposed a new biofuel, and it's made from the waste produced by distilling whiskey. They say that the main byproducts from whiskey, it's called pot ale, A-L-E, pot ale. It's the leftover liquid from the copper stills, and the draft from the leftover grain could be used to create biofuels that would offer, get this, they would offer 30% more power than ethanol, 30% more power than ethanol, and be used in regular cars without any modifications to engines. They have filed a patent application for the fuel and plan to set up a company to get it into British gas stations. There you go. That's my 2 cents for today. How are you doing?
I wouldn't mind having an electric car. Yesterday I had to make a little trip up to the post office and the bank, just make the little loop like I always do, maybe stop by the UPS store or Kinko's, the grocery store, and it's just one big loop for me, and I can hit all kind of in the same little, it's literally a loop all the way around. We live in the middle center of this little loop of road where I can hit everything, and you know, that was it. I mean, I get in the car, I go here, 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 it's all in this one big circle, come back to the house, the big circle ends up, and I'm thinking, you know, that this is all I use a vehicle for. You know, we do traveling or the trips or on the road or whatever, we'll take Jen's car, but I'm thinking I could easily have, I'm not so sure I'd be so safe on a scooter, but an electric car for the amount that I drive would be ideal. It would be absolutely perfect for no more than what I drive around town. So I wouldn't mind having it actually at all. No problems at all. I know one thing, Pat, though. My phone has been ringing off the hook ever since this egg scare started. Not going to get into the specifics of interviews and the news media and this, that, and the other. That'll be announced soon enough. But it's been, you know, amazing how many people are taking this event and running with it. Even, I think I mentioned yesterday, even the smaller farmers, the local farmers, the local egg farms, the medium-sized egg farms are really using this kind of to their advantage as well, saying, you know, if you buy small, if you buy local, you know, there's never any guarantees in life, but if this would have happened to a smaller local farm, imagine the effects. We wouldn't be recalling over a half a billion eggs. We would be maybe recalling just a few hundred or maybe just a few thousand instead of, you know, I saw a report yesterday where they're using the formula where if 3,000 people are reported sick, or let's just say 1,000, if 1,000 people have actually reported being sick, they think that number may be 40 times that. They're just not reported cases. So they're thinking maybe 30 or 40,000 people across America may be suffering now from the salmonella versus just 1,000 reported cases. I saw that on two different medias this yesterday, matter of fact. And I heard it from someone else who actually saw it on the news. So, but they were just trying to, you know, put that in perspective. If you bought locally from a smaller farm, then the outcome of this would not have been as great as we have these, you know, the big mass producers of our food. So, and I've been having to educate so many people, including backyard folks, that yes, this is a fact. There is no study. Yes, Dr. Bridget McRae would love to have the funding to do a study to prove that backyard eggs may be safer than store-bought eggs. Sure, But as far as we know right now, there's no study that proved that. So no one can get on and say, oh, yeah, backyard eggs are much safer. The bottom line is if you have backyard chickens, and regardless of the kind of environment you have, you could have a chicken that's producing a salmonella egg. You just never know without that test. But we, all the backyard folks, we have that peace of mind based on our clean coops, our clean nesting boxes, the environment that they're in. But maybe this will get some funding for someone to have a grant to actually do a study based on comparing the safeness of the backyard flocks versus the more commercial flocks. Having to see that across the board, it's all over the news right now. And you have to use precaution. And a great website to do that, to learn more about keeping your birds healthy, is of course the PSA that we run on this radio show, which is healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. You can go there and get all kinds of information, especially if you go to sales, you visit different people with different flocks in their backyard, and you travel a lot versus just staying in your backyard. Definitely using some of the suggestions they do as far as cleaning and whatnot for that, to protect your birds from illness. So it's a big thing. It's all in the news. And you know what else I said, Pat? I told folks, I went to the bank yesterday and I was telling folks that, you know, do you even remember the brand of peanut butter that was recalled specifically a couple of years ago? Not one person could remember. Do you remember what Leafy Green was recalled a year or two ago that had a big scare? I think a couple of people got spinach. Do you remember initially how it got started? People were blaming what fast food restaurant? They were saying, you know, nobody remembered it was Taco Bell, and they thought it might have been green chilies or something. Who knows? Or the onions, the green little pieces of green onion they put. So this too shall pass, because if you look back at the peanut butter recall, the tomato recall, all the prepackaged spinach recall, all this, when I've been asking people the last couple of days, Pat, nobody remembers. They don't even know the brand of peanut butter. They don't know the if it was even spinach or lettuce or prepackaged or not. So this too will pass in time, and it'll be another news story next week, next month, next year that we'll all be concerned with, or that'll catch our ear. So just interesting on how that happens. So just asking people about this. So it's one of those things. Live and learn. I do know one thing, and we have a great show lined up for everybody today. Christine Heinrich, author and historian. Christine Heinrich is going to be joining us, I believe, with Thomas Condon, and they're going to be teaching us all about jungle fowl. This should be a very, very interesting show. You want to make sure you have pen and paper available. And, of course, being Tuesday, it is eggcartons.com Tuesday. We have a great prize for some lucky winner that may actually, at the end of the show, when we have our chicken trivia question, if they can be the right caller and answer the question with the right answer, then they're going to win an awesome prize from eggcartons.com. Today, they have offered up, and this kind of goes with what we're doing this last couple of weeks, you'll get a really nice yellow eggs for sale yard sign with stand. And this retails, I think, $34.95. It's $34.95, and you can get a picture of that at eggcartons.com. Fresh eggs for sale. With a stand, you can put this right out in your front yard. And let me tell you, right now, you'd probably have all the business you could ever want or imagine if you're selling some of your backyard eggs. So this kind of goes right in line with what's going on across America. So one lucky winner today is going to win $34.95 value yellow eggs for sale yard sign with stand from eggcartons.com. That'll be the very last thing we do in the show. For everybody, that'll be later today. So what we're going to do is take a real quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to welcome Christine Heinrich, and I believe we also have Thomas Condon. They're going to be teaching us all about jungle fowl. Not going to want to miss it. Get that pen and paper ready to take some notes. We'll be back right after this short break.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at McMurrayHatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest and oldest rare breed hatchery.
ManaPro understands that poultry owners are as diverse as the birds they care for, which is why they offer both medicated and non-medicated starters. Whichever product you choose, you know you're getting great nutrition for your new chick. Look for ManaPro products at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
Since 1947, Randall Berkey has been providing quality products to their customers. They have everything you could ever want or need for backyard poultry. Feeders, waterers, medications, supplements, nesting boxes, and even coops. Visit them online at randallberkey.com and get 10% off your entire order when you use the coupon code WHISPER. That's randallberkey.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today. It is, of course, Tuesday, August the 24th. It's the fourth Tuesday of the month, which means our special guest is author and historian with the SBPA, Christina Heinrich. And we welcome her to the show right now. Welcome to the show, Christine.
Thanks, Andy. Good morning. That was great to hear about the processing class and also the comments about how the egg scare is turning people to other solutions. You know, I've heard a certain amount of hysteria about this, but I think that you're absolutely right. You know, when you've got those huge facilities, you know, that one batch of contamination just spreads through so many thousands, even millions of people. And if we keep our operations small and localized, we can manage those outbreaks when they do occur much better.
Yeah, a lot
or
of
or even
smaller...
if they occur, Christine.
Or if they occur, exactly.
Yeah. So in backyard flocks, I think it's so much. It's got to be so much less. But
it is.
You say
it is.
Don't have any studies. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. My little flockette here, as you call them, just four chickens. I feel like it's not, when you use that word flockette, I thought, I hesitate to call them a flock since I've got three roosters and one hen. I sort of think of a flock as being hens with the occasional rooster.
Oh, dear.
But they're just adorable, and I'm having a great time with them, and I'm going to be taking them out to the local poultry show in October, and I know that out here in California, hardly anyone has Dorkings, so I know that the colored Dorking and the white Dorking will create a sensation.
Yeah, well, you've got some real winners there, and I tell you, I still so often think about our session that we had on the Dorkings and how they traveled with the Romans and were one of their original foundation breeds for so many of our modern breeds. I mean, they're really a historic and amazing breed. So I'm thrilled you've got some.
Yes. I'm hoping that if my neighbors complain and I'm not able to keep this rooster, that he will go into a breeding program out here and perhaps establish a new flock and get some Dorkings going out here. They do have a very proud heritage, and we need to keep them going.
Yes, absolutely. Great. But today we're talking about jungle fowl, right? And
That's right.
Is Thomas Condon, is he with us on the line?
I brought him on the line just now. Thomas,
yeah,
welcome to the show.
I'm here.
Great.
Well, welcome, Thomas. And did I pronounce your name right?
You did. Yep, it's Thomas.
Okay.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Well, thanks for being on the line. And Christine, why don't you take the lead? Today's topic is jungle fowl, and that's another amazing foundation breed that that we can certainly learn a lot more about. Why don't you take it away?
Okay, well, there's several species of jungle fowl, the main one being the red jungle fowl, which is considered to be the main genetic ancestor of all of our domestic birds. And red jungle fowl are perfectly legal to have in this country, and they are shown, they are recognized by the American Bantam Association because they are rather small birds. Bear in mind that this is a bird of the jungle, and that a small live bird that can fly well can elude predators much better than a larger bird, although in domestication they do get larger very quickly. Now, Tom, 2 years ago, went to India to actually study jungle fowl in their native habitat. Tom, why don't you tell us about that?
Yep, it was actually 2007. I went in May. And I spent a month over in India. I was up just southeast of Dehradun in north central India. And I'd just spend every morning and every evening cruising around through the national park there, usually on a jeep, but sometimes we went on elephant back, and just look for birds. And I spent quite a bit of time doing that.
So yes, Tom, these are the original jungle fowl. I mean, you were at the source, the genetic source, is that right?
I guess you could say that. The origins of the domestic chicken, the whole domestication process, there's still a lot of debate as to where it occurred, what species contributed to, you know, what we have now, and all these questions. So there's really a lot of debate still going on about that. But, yeah, these were truly wild birds, what were there before, you know, domestic chickens were even here, so...
Wow, that boy! I'd love to see your slides or your pictures from that. How was the elephant ride? Did they did you went well the little box, or were you right behind the ears?
Pat,
There were just some blankets thrown over the back, and we all just kind of hunkered down up on top of them and walked through some trails and just looked for birds.
That's awesome.
Pat?
Yeah, Christine.
I've got a picture of Tom on an elephant on my blog. It's poultrybookstore.blogspot.com.
I'll go there right now. I want to see this. I don't know if you folks out there have ridden an elephant, but it can be a little scratchy because their hairs are so prickly. But Tom, tell us now that the elephants didn't scare the jungle fowl away. I mean, if I were a little jungle fowl and this big thing started coming at me, I think I'd just hide.
They're used to the large animals that are in the parks, and it's actually we are able to get closer to some birds than we were riding in the jeep that we use most of the time. And the only time I observed a hen with a brood of chicks was when we were on elephant back. So it provided a different perspective on the area, and you know, we got a little closer to some birds that we might not have gotten close to in the jeep.
Wow.
I'm looking at
yeah.
the picture. I'm at the blog spot right now. It's www.poultrybookstore.blogspot.com, and there you are, right at the top, and picture of you riding the elephant through the through the jungle there, looking for jungle fowl. It's got a picture here of one as well. So I encourage you while you're listening live to head on over there. poultrybookstore.blogspot.com and take a look. There's a picture of Tom right there. Now, Thomas, you're right down the road from me, down it looks like a 912 area code near Savannah and Statesboro and Pooler and down in that area.
Yep, I'm in Statesboro now. I'm a graduate student at Georgia Southern, actually.
That's great. What are you studying?
I'm studying red jungle fowl.
Really?
Yeah.
There's official curriculum for that, or are you getting your PhD or master's in this? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
And I went to University of Connecticut and graduated in 2009, so a year and a half ago, and moved down here and went to grad school at Georgia Southern, and kind of developed a plan in terms of my master's project working with jungle fowl. So.
And what will your master's degree be in, officially?
Yeah, I'm in the biology department here.
Ah, okay, very
good. So it'll be a biology degree.
Amazing. Very, very cool. That, what a great lifetime trip. That must have been an awesome trip for you. What are some things that surprised you about your trip, and how did that help you with your master's program?
Well, actually, I was still an undergraduate when I went to India. And so what I did there really, you know, just provided me with some background information and contacts over in India that are still useful now, but didn't actually contribute to what I'm doing now. I was able to meet with scientists at the Forest Research Institute and the Wildlife Institute of India. They're both in Dehradun. And I met with them. And so developed those, you know, valuable contacts. And we kind of, you know, got to observe the birds in the wild and see how they behaved. And got to observe, you know, the primary question we have now is genetic integrity of red jungle fowl, you know, genetic contamination from hybridization with domestic chickens. And the idea was to go over there and observe wild birds and see, you know, the possibility of gene flow from domestic birds into these wild populations and to see if there was actually hybridization and genetic contamination occurring.
And?
Well, it was difficult to say. The possibility was definitely there. We saw free-ranging or escaped domestic chickens, you know, within 50 to 100 meters of the boundary of the park, where we saw jungle fowl just right over, right into the park. So the possibility of gene flow in that way is certainly there. Actually looking at the birds and saying, well, they're guaranteed to be hybridization going on, that was more difficult to say. But we think that is occurring.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. I read somewhere, in fact, I'd love to ask you this about, Thomas, because you're obviously the expert here, is that if you line breed, I mean, just if you just have a small flock over generations, like 20, 30 years, that
right.
They will eventually genetically, or actually their phenotypes will tend to look more towards the jungle fowl. Have you heard that
are you just saying any type of domestic chicken? If you were just to turn a whole bunch of domestic chickens loose and let them breed at will, would they?
And let them line breed at will. Yeah, that they'll start after I don't know how many generations, but they'll start looking like jungle fowl.
You know, that's been kind of speculated, but I don't think that really occurs. You know, once you know you have these domesticated genes in a population, they never really go away. And as such, you get all kinds of different colors popping up. And a good example of this is the birds down in Fitzgerald, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And so those birds, we suspect, are carrying red jungle fowl genes, and they're, you know, have all kinds of other domestic chickens mixed in with them, supposedly. And, you know, a lot of them do have that red jungle fowl phenotype, that black-breasted red coloration. But a lot of them don't as well. So, you know, they're not reverting all the way completely back.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, they didn't say completely back. It's just the coloring and the body types.
Right.
Yeah, the
yeah,
phenotype.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that to be the case in most cases anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting. I know of... The hearsay evidence of one flock that's been contained that might have happened to, but they wanted to remain anonymous, so
okay.
I can't tell you who. But that well, now, Thomas, are you also following with the Poultry Genome Project? Is that part of your studies?
Now, specifically, where what are you talking about with regards to that, or?
Well, I'm not sure. I just know there's a poultry genome project that is happening, and to be able to trace the genes and do the genetic pairs and that sort of thing. And that's about all I know about it. They're coming up with remarkable genetic similarities between humans and reptiles and all kinds of things like that. But I'd have to research out any more of it. I was just wondering if they're teaching that in poultry science or in your classes.
Well, they sequenced the red jungle fowl genome and the chicken genome, I guess, a while back now. Must have been several or more years ago. And but the birds that they used for that, I'm not sure the origins or the genetic, the purity of those birds, the individuals that they used for that sequencing. There, you know, more work is being done currently. There's a paper just came out last January or February in Nature about, you know, looking at molecular genetic techniques, looking at markers for domestic chickens. And by, you know, looking at it that way. So we're starting to get involved with that a little bit. We're coordinating with some researchers over in Sweden. And so we're starting to get our foot in the door when it comes to looking at, you know, genetic, more genetic components to things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, there's just so much that's, the knowledge base is expanding so exponentially. I was just wondering if that was part of it. And I understand, like, the jungle fowl, correct me if I'm wrong on this too, that it's actually a member of the pheasant family, like a tropical pheasant. Is that
right? Well, that's correct. They are technically a pheasant. They're you know, categorized with, you know, your common ringneck pheasants and your Lady Amherst and all those varieties. So technically, I guess you could say a chicken is a pheasant.
Really?
And you could say that, I guess.
Oh, wait till I tell my mom I have pheasants. She's going to love that. So a chicken is technically a pheasant. Whisper, did you know that?
I did not know that.
I didn't either. Okay, well, there's another trivia question for you.
Pat?
Yeah, Christine.
Yeah, an interesting genetic note. The Auburn Java appeared unexpectedly in a flock of Javas that began at Garfield Farm Museum. They were hatching quite a few eggs because the eggs were being used at the Chicago Museum of Science and Industry to demonstrate their genetics project. So they were hatching about 8,000 eggs a year, and to everyone's surprise, the Auburn variety of Javas, which hadn't been seen since the late 19th century, appeared in that flock. And there are several flocks now being raised by fanciers, which is restoring this very historic breed. It's significant because it was influential in the development of the Rhode Island Red. And yet, everyone thought it was gone for good, but those genes were in there somewhere, and just by hatching enough eggs, sure enough, it showed up.
Did they line breed to get it kind of homogeneous, or did they?
You know, I'm not sure how they approached that. Yeah.
And what breed was
this
again, Christine?
This is the Java.
Oh, it's Java. Okay. And they were able to recreate, say the breed again?
It's the Auburn variety of Javas.
Auburn Javas. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Well, I know there's books on feather genetics and feather type genetics. One of the vets was talking with me about that, which would be awfully interesting. Is that something that must be something you study quite a bit then, Thomas? Would be just the genetics of the feather patterning?
Oh, I haven't really gotten too far into that yet. We haven't really looked at. We've talked about looking at, quantifying feather coloration and using that to compare among flocks and among populations, but we haven't got around to doing that quite yet.
There's a comment in the chat room too. It says there's a 60 minute show about creating the dino chicken, and I read a little article that actually chickens have Tyrannosaurus Rex genes in them, and that it might be theoretically possible to recreate the Rex, the Tyrannosaurus Rex, which was not a nice little being. I mean, I'm not sure I want to bring these extinct things back, but
I've known a few roosters in my time that probably could be classified as a T-Rex.
Yeah, really, they'll come right at you. But apparently they have these little hands that develop too. How would you like to have a rooster not only with spurs but with little hands that could grip you, and teeth? I mean, sharp ones.
They actually have taken that DNA pat and they have grown teeth in the baby chicks before they hatch, but they get to a certain point and they all die within the shell based on playing with their DNA. I remember somewhere I've got an article about that. It was first the dino chicken and the related to the T-Rex. Then it was teeth and would you know, do our chickens have teeth? And they actually have grown baby chicks in the shell up to the point to where they will have teeth in their beak, but something happens along with this this magic creation that they're doing, and then they can't have one actually that would survive the entire 21 days, but they do have it where they will grow teeth inside their mouth.
Wow. I don't want my chickens to have teeth. I'm happy with them as they are. When I hand feed them, you know, there goes a finger. There goes a... Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Well, that's amazing. That's amazing. Chicken with teeth.
So I have to ask this question because I have no idea. Christine, is the jungle fowl on any type of list with the SPPA?
Well, certainly it's on the critical list because they're Tom perhaps can comment on the difficulty of keeping them. They need to be selected very carefully because they do get large so easily when they're being domesticated. And when you're trying to keep what is essentially a wild animal, a wild bird, in captive conditions, it's never quite the same. The pressures that are on those birds in the wild will inevitably select birds that are different from those that people are selecting for exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Interesting.
Well, that makes sense.
I'm going to have to start looking a lot closer at the shows to see if I can't hunt some of these down and get some pictures of them.
Yes, yes, I'm sure they're out there. Tom, can you? Are you keeping some yourself?
I am, and it's funny because I was thinking about this earlier, but the red jungle fowl that you see in any type of shows or exhibition like that are invariably going to be hybrids between red jungle fowl and domestic chickens, or simply chickens that appear to be red jungle fowl. They're pretty much basically a chicken, but they have the phenotype of red jungle fowl, and they act and behave different from the pure wild ancestor. And because if you were to take genetically pure wild red jungle fowl and put them in a pen and have people constantly walking by and looking at them, and they would inevitably probably beat themselves against the top of the pen and they wouldn't do very good in those type of conditions. So they're very extremely wild, extremely wary, and they probably wouldn't do too well in a show type format or exhibition.
So how do you keep yours, Tom?
We have fairly large pens. They have to be covered because they can fly very well. And if you were to you can't free range them because they'd fly off over the trees and you'd never see them again. So you have to have fairly good sized pens with netting or fence over the top. And with as few disturbances as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I won't be adding one to my flock. Go ahead, Whisper.
I was just going to ask if they seem to be, the original ones must be, to still be around, very predator savvy and being able to identify predators and actually get away from them before they even cause a problem. I'm guessing if that's in their genes, if you will, that maybe that's something that people have looked at crossing the red jungle fowl with other breeds to make them more predator savvy. What's your take on that? I guess obviously they are. They've been around for thousands of years. But what have your studies come up with that being predator savvy?
Yes, they very much are. So they have a lot of predators over in the wild in India and Southeast Asia. And, things are going to prey on the nests, on the adult birds, on the chicks. And they're very wary and very skittish. You can't get close to them at all. I was trying to photograph and take video of them over in India. And it was very difficult because as soon as we'd slow down with the Jeep, they'd see the Jeep stop and they'd just, book towards the woods or fly away. So they're always on the lookout. You can see in their behavior. They'll be scratching for food or drinking water. But every few seconds, they'll look up and scan around and look for predators. So, yeah, they're very, very, very good at avoiding predators.
Ever on the alert. My rooster does exactly that. He scratches around and looks up. He's like a little periscope. So it must be his, jungle file coming out. He's he's really a combat guy. Anyway.
That's perfect. It's top of the hour. We'll take a little commercial break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking with Christina Heinrich, author and historian with the SBPA, and Thomas Condon, who's getting his studies on the jungle file, and actually even has taken trips to, I think he said, Africa, studying the red jungle file. So stay with us. Keep the pen and paper handy for all these notes you're going to want to take. We'll be back right after this short break.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at McMurrayHatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest and oldest rare breed hatchery.
Since 1947, Randall Berkey has been providing quality products to their customers. They have everything you could ever want or need for backyard poultry. Feeders, waterers, medications, supplements, nesting boxes, and even coops. Visit them online at randallberkey.com and get 10% off your entire order when you use the coupon code WHISPER. That's randallberkey.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
No, there's no Super Chicken here. It's just Pat and Andy and Christine and Thomas all talking about the jungle fowl, and a very, very interesting conversation. And we've got about 15 more minutes to continue talking about the jungle fowl and learning all about it before we have to break away and go to our eggcartons.com chicken trivia contest today. So, Christina, we'll put it back over into your court.
Yes, that the subject of the dino chicken came up, and if you are on my blog and search for Oriental Games, this is back in November 2009, I posted about those, and there's a picture on there of a flock of Wheaton Malay chickens, and if you sort of squint your eyes, it looks just like a flock of velociraptors. Yeah, I looked at those and I thought, boy, you know, this just looks like something right out of Jurassic Park.
Wow. Yeah, that's, well, and the possibility we could bring them back is an interesting prospect, too. I don't know, Jurassic park scared the bejesus out of me. I don't know if you saw that. I mean, well, those guys are extinct. Let's leave them be.
Well, we have our own little friends among our chickens. I think that they're enough for us right now. They certainly, they lay eggs. They have the scaly legs. It seems really obvious that dinosaurs are among us.
Yeah, there you go. They're probably closer than we think. So,
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, maybe Tom could talk a little bit about the other species of jungle fowl. You know, we've talked mostly about the red jungle fowl, which is the one we're most familiar with. But there are some other birds over there in Asia that are also jungle fowl, but they are really quite distinct species.
The red jungle fowl is found in from eastern Pakistan all the way through Southeast Asia, and it's most widely distributed of the four species. But we also have the gray jungle fowl, which are in south and western India, and they kind of overlap a little bit with the reds. The Ceylon jungle fowl are in what is present-day Sri Lanka. It used to be Ceylon, the island off of the south of India. And then you have the green jungle fowl, which is found in several of the Indonesian islands. And they overlap a little bit with the reds as well. So we have four species of jungle fowl all across, peninsular Asia and Southeast Asia. So.
Wow.
What are some of the research that you're doing with the jungle fowl? How is that and how can that be used as far as the knowledge with some of the other breeds and kind of tracking our everyday backyard breeds back to the original chicken 10,000 years ago? What are some of the things you're hoping your research will be able to contribute to us backyard folks, the show folks, and even maybe some of the commercial folks that raise chickens? What are some of the goals you have?
Well, the study we're working with in particular, the focus is on looking for ways to distinguish between, your genetically pure red jungle fowl and your jungle fowl that are contaminated with these domestic genes. So the idea is to be able to develop methods to do this, both morphologically and using molecular genetic techniques. And the concern is, like I said before, that you have these populations of red jungle fowl in the wild that are being contaminated with this hybridization with domestics, with free-ranging or escaped domestic chickens. And we think that this is occurring all across South and Southeast Asia, and that we're effectively losing the pure wild ancestor, the genetically pure wild ancestor of our modern domestic chicken. So, we want to save those genetic resources, that are contained in these pure wild flocks. And to do that, we have to be able to distinguish between what is pure and what is not, and then be able to actually go into the wild and protect these potentially pure populations. So it has a huge value to, the poultry industry, because that is the reservoir of these, these spare parts for the domestic chicken, if you will.
Hmm. Well, now, can they save some of the genes, embryo banks or sperm banks with the jungle fowl?
We could potentially look into doing it that way, but, if we can, the ideal thing to do is actually save, captive flocks and flocks over in the wild, actually protect them from this contamination.
Mm-hmm. Are you putting up little pools of flocks around the world to keep them going? Do you have, breeding centers that will help perpetuate the flock?
Well, what we have now is we have one captive flock of, these putatively pure red jungle fowl that were actually brought to the United States back in the early 1960s, and we're propagating this one captive flock, and that's in, outside of Asia, they're the only thing that we have, really, in terms of birds that we think are, as pure as we have. We really haven't done any... there really hasn't been anything done to look at the status of the pure wild, the populations in the wild. So that's something that needs to be done. It needs to be worked on
there's,
further.
There's your doctoral thesis.
Right. So.
Well, do you plan to go after your doctorates, Tom, and get with the Jungle Fowl continue on and specialize in that?
I'm still thinking about it. Definitely it's something to consider. I'm not sure exactly what the plan is now. I would like to get some experience in the field before getting a doctorate, but I'll always be working with Jungle Fowl regardless of where I'm at. So.
That's pretty. It's amazing. And are there other people like you that are studying the jungle fowl, or are you emerging as the world's expert in that area?
Well, there's a small core of us that are working with pretty much red jungle fowl specifically, but we also have interest in the other members of the genus. But there's a small group of us working, in the United States, and there's a few other people scattered here and there, but there's surprisingly few people that are actually interested in jungle fowl as a species.
Okay, but I bet you guys all must know each other.
yeah, we're pretty familiar with each other. We all work together.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there was a question in the chat room. So basically, is it safe to say that the jungle fowl are going extinct through interbreeding?
Well, that's the idea. That's the hypothesis that's out there, is that mm-hmm. they're either endangered or possibly even extinct already in the wild because of this, contamination, this genetic contamination from hybridization. We don't know if that's true. We don't know the extent of it, the severity of it, until we actually develop methods to distinguish between pure and contaminated birds and then actually apply that to wild populations. But that's the running hypothesis anyway.
And about what, do you have an estimate of the world's population of these birds, of the pure birds or uncontaminated birds?
We can't really say that. I can kind of estimate the population of the captive flock that we have would be several hundred, probably not a thousand birds, so less than a thousand birds and it's probably only a few hundred.
Probably only a few hundred. You have a captive flock of 1,000. And a few hundred was the what?
Well, no. It's less, certainly less than 1,000, probably in the number of a few hundred in terms of our captive flock, all total.
So that's not quite enough to keep the genetic pool going for forever.
Well, not forever.
A long time, but not forever. But yeah.
Right. We've been doing remarkably well, and we're actually increasing the size of the population. They've been in captivity, like I said, since the 60s. And they bottlenecked down to only a handful of birds in the 70s, and we've just recently been doing really well at propagating them. So,
okay.
We had
in the chat room, Dr. McCrae wants to know where you're going to publish your results. Where are you going to publish your articles?
That's still we're collecting the data, and we're going to be analyzing it and writing things up, and over the course of the next year or so. And so, I'm not sure exactly where everything's going to be published, but at this point.
Are there one or two journals you've got your eye on?
Not at this point, no. There's a lot of good journals out there, but we're not sure exactly where we're going with it yet.
Well, I don't think backyard poultry is quite the one for this for these this breed, given their wild nature, and that might not be the best journal. Anyway.
There's also a great comment in the chat room, which is hilarious, is that. I don't know any ordinances across America that outlaw dinosaurs in your backyard. So being that chickens actually have DNA from dinosaurs, maybe there's a loophole somewhere here. Maybe somebody needs to, next time they're called out as keeping poultry in their backyard, they need to say, no, we can take DNA from my chickens. These are dinosaurs in my backyard. And nowhere does it say I can't have dinosaurs in the city. So I think maybe somebody ought to try that one of these days.
Oh, God. I'm sure it's a special permit issue, though. I mean, I got to tell you, I'm not sure I want a dinosaur next door, Whisper. They'd have to get my permission first.
Oh, no.
Oh, not the permission thing again.
No, not that again.
Please, not that again. Oh, dear.
I love it. So there's
another. I was just going to say there's one more question. You want to take it to Whisper by Spongy?
Go ahead.
Oh, Spongy asks, are jungle fowl protected in their native habitat, or does no one recognize the threat to them?
Right. So they're so widespread, and they're relatively common. the IUCN, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, they have the red jungle fowl listed as a species of least concern because they're so widespread and so common. The idea that they could be genetically contaminated is a relatively new idea, and so no, they have no official conservation status.
Tom, that might be a place where your research would really make a big difference in helping to shine a light on the problems that are occurring and create some more protection for these birds.
Right. Yeah. It all depends on where it goes and what we can actually show, and the actual application of new techniques and existing techniques to looking at wild populations. So once we do that, we'll have a better understanding of what we're working with.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What's impressive? You're doing this research, Tom. Thank you for doing it. Thank you on behalf of the rest of us.
Yeah. Amazing.
Dr. McCrae wants a copy of your article once it's published. So if you come back on the show and let us know when it's published and where we can read it.
All right.
Definitely. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Thomas. And
well,
of course, Christine, as always, the fourth Monday of Tuesday of every month, the Christine Heinrich, author of How to Raise Poultry and How to Raise Chickens, and of course, historian with the Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities. And you can go to the poultrybookstore.com. In fact, Christine, go ahead and give us your blog and your website so our listeners can visit that.
Well, that's correct, Andy. It's poultrybookstore.com is the site, and poultrybookstore.blogspot.com is the blog. And I just posted some new pictures of my hatchlings today, so you can see how well those Dorkings and Icelandics are growing up. And we're looking forward to next month. We're going to be talking with Mike Gilbert about showing and about his projects. He's doing a lot of work with Chanticleers.
Perfect. That's wonderful. And let's see, that would be in September. I think I already have that down, and I also have some, we're going to be talking about tips, tricks, and traps of long-distance transporting of birds to shows. So he'll be able to share us with all the show folks about ways to transport your birds long distances so it's not so stressful for them, and tricks of the trade and some dangers to look out for. So I'm sure lots of folks will be interested in that topic as well. So we're definitely looking forward to that. Again, the fourth Tuesday of every month, we welcome Christine Heinrich with the SPPA and accredited author. So thank you very much for joining us. As always, lots of great information.
Okay, thank you. And do also check out the Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities on Facebook and consider joining so that you can list your birds in the Breeders Directory, which is being compiled now.
Excellent, excellent. And I read that notice that you had sent Christine before about how to do that. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I didn't say anything. I didn't hear anything.
Oh, we did read that notice, but yes. And there, I think some of our listeners were going to send in their flocks or the numbers of their poultry antiquities. So you ought to be getting some Chicken Whisperer response.
Great. Thanks very much, Pat.
Sure. Sure.
Actually, we may want to keep Christine on as kind of specialist for this trivia question. So before we go to break, I'm going to ask the chicken trivia question. What we're going to do is we're going to take caller number 7. This is the Tuesday EggCartons.com Chicken Trivia Contest. Every Tuesday is sponsored by EggCartons.com. And today's chicken trivia question is, depending on if I can read it correctly, what breed is thought to be the reason that the Houdan breed has a fifth toe? So what breed, and it has been mentioned on this radio show several times, this breed has been mentioned several times, and it was even mentioned in the chat room. What breed is thought to be the reason that the Houdan breed has a fifth toe? If you know the answer to that, we're going to take caller number 7 at 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. We're going to go to commercial break, and we come back. Hopefully we'll have a caller that may know that. One more time, what breed is thought to be the reason that the Houdan breed has a fifth toe? That's what we're looking for. This breed was mentioned several times on the radio show today, and it was even typed in the chat room a couple of times. So if you know, caller number 7, 347-637-3237. So give us a call, and you're going to win a great prize from eggcartons.com, a fresh farm eggs chicken sign for your front yard, which can come in handy right now. So give us a call if you want to have a chance to win. We'll be back right after this short break. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We're right in the middle of our eggcartons.com chicken trivia contest we're having today. And let me get over here so I can read you the question one more time and give you the call-in number. Here we go. What breed is thought to be the reason that the Houdan breed owes its fifth toe, or why it has a fifth toe? What breed is thought to be the reason that the Houdan breed has a fifth toe? And, of course, I have brought Christine Heinrich back on, and Pat is back on live as well. Hang on 1 second. There you go. I don't know what happened, but Pat now is back live, so no problem. And we're going to go to the phone lines right now. Pardon me. Okay, welcome, caller. You are live on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, calling in from area code 440-440. If you'll state your name and what state you're calling from, please.
Hi, my name's Steve, and I'm from Ohio.
Steve. A Buckeye.
Hi, Pat. Hi, Christine. Hi, well, Andy.
Hello.
Hi, Steve.
Okay, what do you want to take a look at this question here? What breed do you think may be the answer here?
They believe that the fifth toe is attributed to interbreeding with the Dorking at some earlier time.
Christine, do you concur?
I do. That's absolutely correct. The Dorking is also previously was known as the old five-toed fowl.
How would you like to be called that in the brooder? You're a five-toe fowl. You're a five-toe fowl. I can just hear it now.
What a legacy, huh? Oh, that's funny.
Steve, do you have any poultry yourself?
I'm actually just getting started. I'm looking at Danvers.
Very good. Christina, do you have any? I get this made up. My personal assistant's Christina, and we've got Christine on the radio, and it's just absolutely amazing. So how about that breed, Christine and Pat?
Oh, yeah, they're darling. Those are bantams, of course. They're considered a true bantam because there's not a corresponding large fowl chicken. So they're lovely birds, and people who have them, they're good broody hens as well.
Yeah. I'm trying to get something small. I'm one of those. I'm going to wind up being one of those stealth chicken ears, unfortunately.
Keeping chickens under the radar. Just call them dinosaurs. You should be okay.
Right. In Madison, Wisconsin, they call themselves the Chicken Underground.
That's right. There's even a Chicken Underground Railroad where some of us are harboring illegal chickens just till they can go back home.
Do you need some help getting chickens legal out there? What's the problem?
It's in Washington, D.C. is the problem.
Well, in our area, it's just a kind of intractable zoning board that is kind of trying to preserve a certain look out here, and they don't think chickens belong, so...
that's the problem. That's the problem. They don't think. and obviously aren't looking at the factual information. That's what gets me so upset all the time, is if they would just take the time to read the facts, not the rumors, not the hearsay, not the stereotypes, but the factual information, then I think it would be hard for them to not allow backyard poultry if they would just read the facts. But, I mean, they're obviously not wanting to do that, and there you can always try to vote them out and get some other folks in there that are willing to read the factual information. But Steve, up in Ohio, are you going to attend the Ohio National? It's the largest poultry show in the United States. It's going to be in Columbus coming up in November.
Absolutely, I've already got my room reservation, so hopefully I'll bump into some people down there.
Yep, we've got our room reservation. We're hoping to be there live, broadcasting live on location that Saturday morning. So stop by the booth and say hello. And what I'm going to do, Steve, is I'll give you a call, or Christina will give you a call after the radio show. We'll get all your shipping information for eggcartons.com, and you've got a you can put this sign in kind of storage until you get your birds and they start laying good, fresh backyard eggs. And then you'll have a nice sign there to advertise to everybody, even though they're not allowed, that you can come by there, Steve's house, and get some fresh eggs.
Well,
sure,
I have some friends that sell eggs. It might be appropriate to send it over their way because they're helping me a lot. So.
Yep, you can re-gift it to them, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Steve,
hey, Whisper, I've got a political statement that we can do with that sign. Is you put a cross against it and say no fresh eggs, and then something as a protest saying because we can't have chickens. I mean, can you imagine those in lawns all across the U.S. that the cities that don't allow chickens?
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. We have dinosaurs, but not chickens in our backyard. I like that one. Still, I'm on that.
Oh dear, it may be an empty nest.
Yes, empty nest. Well, hey, thank you very congratulations, Steve. We'll give you a call after the show. And Christine Heinrichs, thank you for joining us again. We look forward to the show next month. And Pat, thank you very much for joining us as always. You do every day, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Tomorrow, let me tell you, tomorrow you do not want to miss this show. In fact, even your non-chicken friends or your friends who are thinking, you got to get them to listen to the show tomorrow. We're going to have a great episode.
Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Tomorrow's topic, Salmonella pylorum. And this was even scheduled long before the big, massive, giant egg recall. But tell your friends, tell everybody you can, backyardchickens.com, all the forums, put the link to tomorrow's show. Have them come and tune in, because we've gotten so many. We're going to be asking Peter questions like, well, how would that hen get salmonella to begin with? I mean, it just doesn't appear. How are they going to get that? And is it transferred to the chick? And then was that chick who start laying? Is it going to have it? All these awesome questions. If my chicken test positive for salmonella, is there a treatment for that where I can cure it? Can I eat it? Is it safe to eat if I want to cull that particular chicken out of my flock? All these great questions we're going to be asking. We'll be taking your phone calls, your questions tomorrow with Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Peter is the founder of First State Vet Supply, firststatevetsupply.com. So you're not going to want to miss the show tomorrow. Again, a 90-minute show. We're going to probably even eliminate some of the chickens in the news and host chat so we can get right to our subject, because this is a big one. Tomorrow we'll be talking with, again, Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Salmonella is our subject for tomorrow. We hope you can tune in 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Become a fan on Facebook if you would. Facebook.com/ The Chicken Whisperer. Pat?
Okay. Well, Whisperer, I've got to ask this. Do we have a password today?
Yes, we do. In fact, the secret password today is roost. I had it right here actually in front of me. The secret password today is roost. And so today roost is actually our seventh password. We will have a total of 20 passwords, and we will be giving this great chicken coop away provided by mypetchicken.com on Friday, September the 10th. Today's secret password is roost. And you can listen to
all the archives
to get all the other passwords. You can listen to all the archives to get the other passwords, so you can have a chance to win. On the 10th of September, we'll take one lucky caller. You'll have to recite all the passwords from all the shows. Today is password number 7, and it is roost. So, thank you for that, Pat.
Okay, well, thanks again to all our sponsors for their support. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for their support in favor of backyard poultry. Of course, Christine Heinrichs, thank you, historian for the Society for the Protection of Poultry Antiquities, and Thomas Condon, who's an expert and student of jungle fowl, one of the few in the world experts on that. Andy Schneider, thanks for bringing us all together, as usual, and for all you do for the chicken movement. And, of course, thanks to the chat room chickeners for clucking along. And thanks to blogtalkradio.com for providing our radio, chat, and video services. Blessings to everyone. Thank you so much. We love you all. And may the flock be with you evermore. God bless everybody.
Yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.